And on this edition of Ozarks at Large, we end our series of conversations previewing University of Arkansas Honors College signature seminars that will take place in the fall. Our last preview brings a pair of scholars to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Padma Viswanathan, Associate Professor of English at the University of Arkansas, and Justin Barnum, a visiting assistant professor in the U of A's Department of Sociology and Criminology. Combined, they will lead a seminar titled She Done It, a seminar that will explore female criminality. The course will draw on history and literature. Padma says she was inspired to create the seminar as she worked on a nonfiction book about a friend whose stepmother was a bank robber in Canada in the 1950s. That work led Padma to investigate how her subject was treated in the Canadian justice system and more. And Padma says she wanted to make sure that when she led the seminar, she did it with someone from sociology. Justin says it's important to note that while he is a sociologist, he's not a criminologist.
Although criminology kind of grows out of sociology, there's definitely some major distinctions between us. So in terms of thinking about crime, from a sociology perspective, we're thinking about, well, how do we define crime? And the definition of crime is always related to power. Who's in charge? Who's defining the laws? Who's deciding what is and is not appropriate? And all of this is growing out of this kind of establishment of the norms of society and deviance within society. And there's some really interesting ways that we can think about crime, and we can go all the way back with women in crime to think about like the witch trunts in the early colonial days and think about, well, some interesting research shows that regardless of what the acts were being committed by women that were kind of criminalized as witches, there was kind of a steady percentage of women that were always kind of identified as criminals, as witches. And so we kind of see this development that it's not so much about the crime so much, it's about making sure that when we can label someone, when we can identify that these people are bad, that these people are not law-abiding citizens, that then we can say, well, on the flip side of that, that means that we're good citizens, that we're good people, that these things kind of work off of each other. And so there's kind of this necessity that kind of is kind of tracked in terms of needing deviance, of needing criminality just for the rest of society to be able to say that we're not criminals. So I think that's always important to think about in terms of who is a criminal and how is criminality defined. It's always in relation to kind of the norms of society, but also the norms as being defined by the people in power. So thinking about like a upper middle class kind of morals and virtues and how that gets translated into a legal system.
Will you examine whether if or whether men and women who are seen as criminals are treated differently by society?
It will definitely be one among many topics. One thing that struck me, one of the writers I was reading in the context of my book talked about how women criminals tend to be punished twice, once for breaking the law, and secondly, for having transgressed the idea of female virtue, right? That men are expected in some way to be aggressive, and certainly the vast majority of incarcerated individuals are men. Now, why is that? Because all of our behavior in some way is gendered, and criminality is as well, both on the part of the perpetrator and on the part of societal response to it, which, you know, as Justin just said, our legal system embodies. So, yes, definitely my subject, for example, she committed this robbery in the company of two men. One was her husband. The other was a younger man who, it transpired, was her lover. Then her husband turned up 2 months after the robbery. He had gone from Vancouver, where the robbery happened, to Edmonton to hide out, start a new life. It's not really clear. And then he turned up dead in a ditch of a bullet wound. And the ways that Mary Lloyd, my subject, was portrayed in relation to these two crimes. The murder was never solved, although her young lover was tried for it. But she was, by some people, portrayed as like a feminist journalist who helped her a lot and wrote about her some, said that she was used by the men in her life. She could have been a great lady, but she was used by the men in her life. But the justice who delivered the acquittal of that young man in the murder trial said, I have no doubt that you did this. Everybody here believes that you did this. We just can't prove it. And I believe you did it. at the urging of Mary Lloyd. Now, if you're going to continue to be influenced by her, things will not go well for you. So you have these two very radically different portrayals, both, again, I would say, very gendered. A younger man led astray by this manipulating older woman versus a woman being used by the men in her life. In neither case is she sort of acting on her own volition, right? In both cases, she's defined relationally. And I think that's a huge part of what we see in the differential treatment of men and women criminals.
And I think that's kind of an interesting thing to think about sociologically, because when we're thinking about differences between men and women and kind of how they commit crimes differently or are perceived differently as criminals, we know that women actually kind of are seen by society, by men, and even by themselves as defining themselves in relationship to men, right, as mothers, as significant others. And so kind of thinking about when we're thinking about these double standards that we have in society, we can think of these ideas of how gender is actually one of the things that determines how we define a crime.
You'll use fact and literature in this seminar series?
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's one of the things that we're really figuring out now is how we marry our two disciplines in the course of deciding which texts we'll be looking at. But certainly it's going to be a balance of literary texts representing criminals, which could be fictional or nonfictional. Both are equally interesting, definitely one or two films in there as well, along with various texts that I think Justin is better equipped to talk about.
Yeah, just, you know, being able to bring in kind of the statistical data that's, you know, the evidence that's been accumulated, whether that's by, you know, state, local, national government agencies, but also kind of thinking about, well, how do we talk about these things? And then thinking about even the data that we're collecting on women criminals, who's collecting that data? And so there's a lot of what's presented kind of as fact but may not be as factual in terms of, is the question that's collecting that data, is it actually the question that should be asked?
I think there's also going to be a very interesting tension, I might say, between the sociological theories that Justin will likely bring in and matters of craft and literary technique that our students will also necessarily need to wrestle with, right? Any of us as individuals, we are subject to societal pressures, right? We respond to these things, that we respond to expectations, we've internalized these expectations. But in literature, we're often presenting some kind of distillation of those ideas, and there are pressures to make a story compelling, right? Much of crime writing, we think of it as being quite sensationalistic, necessarily not trying accurately to represent social forces in a complex way. But I do think there are also arguments for the ways that literature can do that. And so hopefully between these sort of frameworks that each of our disciplines brings, students will sort of deconstruct it, falling out both ways, right? How do we tell a story better, taking structural matters into account? How do we achieve certain kinds of accuracy by looking more at the individual versus the societal, right? How do we parse those things?
Yeah, because I imagine a challenge is to not make it too sensational, because I have to admit, the moment you mentioned I'm writing this book about a woman bank robber, boom, I was like, oh, tell me more. This is fascinating. I mean, that's just the criminal element. Is it salacious to begin with?
Mm-hmm. And I think this is kind of where the sociological aspect comes in some more, is kind of really understanding, well, what are those questions for the why, the how, the kind of those things that influence this person to do these things? What are those kinds of environmental, situational kinds of things that kind of frame something, but also present a certain path that maybe, you know, in a certain situation, a woman has no choice but to act in a certain way, or at least she feels she has no choice but to act in a certain way. And I think that's kind of one of the beauties of kind of using sociology to talk about this, is to kind of go back to kind of a pretty common concept in sociology, which is the sociological imagination, which is coined by C. Wright Mills in 1959. He talks about how can you kind of understand that all of us are kind of trapped by society, that we're all kinds of within certain environments where we're kind of limited by the things that are moving around us, whether it's our race, our class, our gender, our access to education and opportunity. And so thinking about, you know, getting students to really think about what is it like to be in the shoes of these women that might have committed these crimes? And then how do I kind of position myself in such a way that I can then write about them or write as them, depending on what the case may be, whether they're real actual people or whether they're these fictional characters that might be developed?
I think also to sort of triangulate between what Justin was saying and what you're saying, there's some aspect of deep curiosity in both these cases, right? Thinking of the criminal as very different from us and sort of intriguing and evil and transgressive, and thinking of the criminal as similar to us in, you know, responding to desire, to social pressures, to necessity, right, to boundaries. And the one very interesting aspect for me in trying to write this story is acknowledging how compelling the fact of this female criminal is. And the story itself is very dramatic, irresistibly dramatic. I mean, I've only given you kind of the, you know, the first few developments in it. And yet I also have this urge to contextualize, right? I want to tell the story so that this momentum is not dampened. So the curiosity of the reader is answered at the same time as not, I don't want to feel that I have answered that at the expense of the sociological imagination, making her seem alien, you know, putting her in some very distant space. Rather, I think the force of literature that I most admire is the literature that makes you identify with somebody who otherwise you wouldn't think you would have a lot in common with.
Have you determined whether there'll be any other noteworthy real life figures that will be discussed?
Not specifically. We're kind of thinking about which types of crime to include. And then I think that's going to determine which figures will come out, whether that's in fiction or in actual life experiences. So,
because I'm just wondering about Patty Hearst. I mean,
her name is arisen.
Yeah. Because there's so many things involved with
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Patty Hearst, exactly, from this question of a young woman possibly brainwashed or manipulated to this question of, say, with her, the women involved in the Baader-Meinhof gang or others who considered themselves to be, you know, political activists doing criminal activities, Assata Shakur, who has ended up in Cuba, Black Panther, Justin brought to my attention a number of very interesting cases where women would perform acts that they, you know, in some ways they had no choice but to perform, but that were defined as criminal, sometimes defined as criminal at the time, and then later no longer, for, you know, because our laws shift to reflect societal expectations. You know, Bonnie Parker has come up. She has a local tie-in as well, right? Justin mentioned Lorena Bobbitt the other day, right? There have been a number of individual cases. Another thing that we were talking about just yesterday was how some famous cases end up becoming, end up having literary works written about them. Others don't. And what is there about a certain story which may be very intriguing and sensationalistic, but which doesn't loan itself to literary retelling as opposed to others that do for whatever reason, which could be some gesture toward myth-making, or it could be that some things are too dire to be talked about. I'm not sure, but that is something else that we might end up investigating.
Padma Viswanathan is an associate professor of English at the University of Arkansas and an author. And Justin Barnum is a visiting assistant professor in the Department of Sociology and Criminology. Together, they will lead a U of A Honors College signature seminar next fall called She Done It. They'll also deliver a free public preview lecture next week, Tuesday, February 19th at 5:15 in Gearhart Hall on the University of Arkansas campus. That preview lecture will also be streamed on the U of A Honors College Facebook Live page.